Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Beards and Banners podcast. I'm Brian Williams.
And I'm Matt McCrory.
Man, we are pumped to be back for episode 4. We've got, I think, some cool stuff to talk about. This is our Thanksgiving episode. And man, we are going to dive off into Thanksgiving and everything that encompasses. Matt, what do you think?
Gobble, gobble, man. I'm ready to roll. I'm ready to eat. I'm ready for it all.
I'll tell you, you know, this is that time of year, right? Like, everybody's busy. Everybody's going. And it seems like Thanksgiving, everybody kind of gets to take a little break, maybe get a couple days off, spend time with the family, friends, all that kind of fun stuff. I don't know about you. Like, I saw a deal, Matt, on social media where people were having Friendsgiving.
Yeah, absolutely.
I feel cheated out of that a little bit. Like, I would have had a great time in my era having a Friendsgiving. And I'm just beyond that, I guess, age-wise. Like, that or I don't have no friends. I'm not sure which one of those happens.
We have to do it virtually, I think.
Well, I was going
to
say, that's pretty much what Beards and Banners is weekly Friendsgiving, probably.
It is. So here's to you, friend.
Hey, there we go. All right. You know, last week we talked a little bit about what's new in the livestock world, like what's out there, what's going on. And I'll tell you, man, these sales just keep rolling. Cattle sales almost every day, getting into a bunch of bred gilt sales. Those sheep guys, I know, they're having a bunch of fall borns or goats being born. It's an exciting time to be in the livestock world. Louisville just got over. The big show in Cheyenne, I think, was this weekend. There's just a ton of stuff going on. And I know it's going to settle down a little bit as we get later into the fall and start thinking about other stuff. But, man, think about it. We're, you know, coming up on right at about a month out from Arizona National and maybe, what, 3 weeks from Denver? When you stop and think about it, and then pretty soon all those Texas majors kick off with Fort Worth and stuff going on down there. And so the ball just keeps on rolling.
Yeah, I've been watching a lot of bred gilt sales, and I think it's really interesting how people have this opportunity right now to make genetic improvements to their herd and kind of seeing what's out there. And I'm going to tell you, there used to be some deals out there, buddy. Not anymore.
No,
you cannot steal one anymore. But the genetics are so good. Phenotypically, these animals are so great. And the cattle deal. A few years ago, I was watching the cattle deal pretty hard for a few people that I try to help out and just locate some good calves, right? And I'd probably watch about 80% of the sales and find 4 or 5 a day to send them. If you can't find 4 or 5 a sale now, right, it is just unbelievable how these things are, they're evolving so much. They're becoming so darn good. They're so stout. They are so big bodied and soft already. I mean, they're really, really impressive. And it just makes me pretty excited. I think it's an exciting time right now in the industry. I think things are rolling pretty good. And I cannot wait to talk about some topics today, my man, that should be really fun.
I know. We've got a full list of stuff. And that's probably one of the things we haven't done a very good job of on the podcast that we thought we'd try out tonight, right?
Like, for sure.
Here's what we got in store. If you're listening, here's what we got in store. Because we know sometimes, and we've admitted it, we get a little long-winded. We like to get in on the topics we're talking about. We get excited about them. But we know we've got some listeners out there that maybe don't care about sires. Or maybe there's a couple pretty diehard livestock enthusiasts out there that don't really care what's on our playlist. They just want to hear what we got to say about livestock. And so, you know, they got to skip around and find stuff. So, you know, we're going to talk about a lot of things tonight. Hey, we're going to have some fun. We're going to talk about Thanksgiving, right? We're going to talk a little bit about playlist, becoming a kind of a cornerstone of Beards and Banners. And I don't know about you, Matt, but that's one of the things that people snap and text me the most probably since this deal has started is, hey, here's what I'm listening to. Have you heard this song? Do you like this one? And I'm not going to lie, I've been pretty proud of myself because most of the stuff that people send me, with the exception of a couple, and man, I'm always ready to broaden my musical horizons, but with the exception of a few, most of those are already on my phone or on my iPad and stuff. Yeah. I listen to.
Doesn't that make you feel good?
It does. It makes me
trendy and
cool and
hip on things.
Yeah. Everybody wants to sit at the cool table, you know? And when
everybody's I'm beginning to learn how to like these newer words like lit, that's fire.
I don't know what that is.
Yeah. It's so basically the gist of it is, if it is like really, really awesome, you just say, instead of that's awesome, you say, that's fire.
That's fire.
That is fire.
Okay. I'm making a note.
Use that on your next grand champion.
Write that down. That
weather is fire.
This one
is fire.
Fire.
Yep.
Got it.
All right. Now,
have you heard this one? I don't know what this is. So I'm hoping you can explain to me. Like we said, I'm not teaching anymore, so I'm a little bit removed from the cool, hip, what we talk about and kind of the vernacular that these cool kids are using. Riz. Do you know what that is? Riz?
Riz.
Riz.
No,
I heard that the other day. He's got Riz or that, whatever, bringing the Riz, whatever. I don't remember what context it was. I didn't know what it was. And so I thought it was Fizz with an F, fizz. Like my pop shook up and I fizzed.
Yeah.
That's not what it was, I don't think. So, listeners, here's your assignment. If you know what that is, Riz, let us know. Because we're old and dumb, and we're not up on cool and hip slang, I guess.
We are not.
So I'd like to work it into a set of reasons, if possible.
Yeah, absolutely, man. That's Riz.
There we go.
My favorite thing we're going to talk about today is our off-topic, not so off-topic today, which talks about the livestock industry as a whole in comparison to the show industry, and how close are we to industry basics? I'm really excited to talk about that, and could be a little conflicting, my man.
It could be. It could be just a nickel controversial, which we're okay with. That seems to always be an ongoing argument of, are these industry driven enough? Do they represent what we are as a commercial industry?
For sure.
We're going to dive off into that a little bit, and I would expect that there's going to be people that have opinions. I can't wait to hear them, and I would almost bet that we have to revisit this topic at some point. Another cornerstone so far through four episodes has been Who's Your Daddy? With just a lot of talk about what stuff's out of genetically, who are the sires on these things. And so, got to have a Who's Your Daddy clip, and that's coming up.
I will tell you that probably the inspirational messages and inspirational thing that we do at the end is what I get the most people bringing towards my life, and they've really grasp onto that. And boy, we're going to have a really good one today, and we're going to talk a little about that, and I think it's going to be a great way to end it. We got to talk about some Thanksgiving dinner, and I'm pumped. All right.
Thanksgiving is kind of in my mind, it's the most American holiday of them all. Let's go to the house. Let's eat until we are physically miserable. Let's lay around, sit around, visit, play cards, watch ball games, and just hang out and enjoy each other's company. I think it's pretty universal, you know, that there's not a lot of expectations on things. It's one of those holidays, there's not a lot of expectations. You know, we talked about Halloween. I think our first episode kind of coincided with Halloween weekend. And we talked about, you know, but even that, you got to get dressed up. I got to come up with a plan. I got to get a costume. I got to, you know, there's a lot of stuff goes into Halloween. Obviously, Christmas right around the corner. Whew. I still love Christmas. But Christmas changes as you drift through life. And you know that, your dad, there's a little more staying up, putting presents together.
Mm-hmm.
Making sure things are done right. A lot of that has to do with keeping the peace in the household, because it seems like usually our better halves are stressed.
Yeah.
During that time of the year.
They have to bake cookies for Santa.
That's right. There's a lot that goes into it.
They have to make sure that the reindeer are fed outside. And they have to make sure that all those things are taken care of. And they sometimes eat our hell.
That gives me a good idea for maybe a future episode. We get to closing in on Christmas. Maybe we can talk about, like, reindeer. I know people judge them. I know they judge them. When you go to Alaska to do the state fair, you have to judge reindeer classes.
You do not understand how bad I want reindeer someday in my life. Now, a little fun fact. Do you know that all reindeer on Santa's sleigh have to be female?
They have to be female.
Yes.
Okay, I'm hooked. Tell me why.
Because the females are the only ones during Christmas that have their antlers still.
Because the males have shed their antlers.
I think so. I could be wrong. I've been wrong about many things in my life, but I've been told that this thing has to be females. So comment, everyone would think male, but she's a lady.
We've got to figure that out between now and Christmas. That is an interesting fact that I was oblivious to until just right now. So, yep.
So today I learned. Wait, someday I'm going to have
reindeer are all female.
My wife has always said I need to grow out my beard and someday be a Santa. So, because I'm a jolly elf.
Matt, you've got the right personality. I don't know anybody maybe that is as consistently happy and upbeat as Matt McCrory. And I think you are a red suit and a white beard away from being jolly Saint Nick.
My cheeks are already rosy, my man. Hey, they should be.
Have a tendency to do that as well. That. I think that could be the Irish coming out in us too. I don't think Santa Claus is Irish though.
I highly doubt it.
Nicholas Claus does not sound Irish to me.
I don't think so either. I probably ended me of the Irish, to tell you the truth. So I don't know. Well, buddy, I gotta ask you.
Okay,
what in the Thanksgiving meal? Oh. Are you looking forward to protein-wise? Are you a ham guy? Are you a turkey? Are you a white meat, dark meat? What are you?
You know, that's a tricky question. I am the world's worst person. Now that I just said that, you know, Thanksgiving's pretty universal, I am the world's worst person to talk to about Thanksgiving food because, and I'm going to say it, it's going to be controversial. I am ready for the outpouring of criticism. I am not a Thanksgiving food aficionado. I'm not a big – I like sliced turkey. I'll eat like a turkey wrap or turkey sandwich. I like that kind of stuff. I even like – I know this is a little bit sacrilege. We're both hog guys. I can even tolerate turkey bacon if that's the only option. But I'm not just a put-it-in-the-oven turkey guy. I've just never been a fan of that. I don't like stuffing or dressing. And like, hey, I can eat bread every day of the week. I don't got to have dinner rolls. And so growing up, the thing that got me the most fired up about Thanksgiving was pumpkin pie. And I could pretty much dive off in that stuff. I'll tell you what, they don't make enough of it for me. Now, you got to have Cool Whip, right? Like you got to have like whipped cream or Cool Whip or something to go with it probably. But man, it's just if I could just mound my plate up with a big old pumpkin pie, I'd be satisfied. I'd be great. You wouldn't have to give me anything else. I guess when it comes to Thanksgiving, I'm like one of them. Here's how I describe it. I'm one of those bears that's been fed hard leading up to the show. And I'm just as full as I can be. And when I get to the backdrop, I'm not hungry anymore. Nothing in that pan gets me excited because I'm about as full as I get.
But what if I put a pumpkin pie right in front of you and just say, come on, boy.
You bet I'd kick my head up. I'd get my legs set. I'd be all in on that. The pull pan man would have to be fighting me off with the pumpkin pie. But I'm telling you, you put a little turkey, little stuffing on there, I'm passing her by.
You go.
I'm going back to the pen.
You would be that frustrating barrow.
I would.
We hate.
Yep. Circle him around. Try it again. Okay, try it again. Nope. Try him again. Nope. Okay, get him out of there.
Where's the pumpkin pie?
Where's somebody get the pumpkin pie?
You know, I don't know if you realize this, but hogs love pumpkin pie. Mm. And they love pumpkins. And mm-hmm. I'll tell you that if I can't get, like, so sometimes sows, their bowels won't move after they give birth and after they farrow. And so one way to do that is put some pumpkin pie in there, and it'll help.
It'll get them going.
System and things like that. And boy, they'll go to town.
Tell me about your Thanksgiving. Tell me what gets you fired up at the dinner table Thanksgiving.
Well, you don't necessarily know this. I love to cook. Love it. Love it. Love it.
Again, another little bit of a reveal of some behind the scenes knowledge here at Beards and Banners. I was unaware of that.
Yeah, I really do. I mean, I like to eat, and everybody can see that. But the cooking aspect of it, I really love. Like, so my mom is an amazing cook. Like, everything that she makes is like absolutely amazing. Like, and my great grandmother was an amazing cook, and she kind of inherited that. And like, so my mom kind of always taught me to cook, and I always had some game, and I was pretty proud of it. But the last few years, I have been kind of in charge of a family's, not necessarily my mom's, because I don't like to take over for hers, but mm-hmm. a family's Thanksgiving meal. And for you years, I've been smoking turkeys, and I love a smoked turkey. And buddy, I know how you complain about them being dry.
Right. Yep.
It's so important, guys. If I know this doesn't come out till Wednesday, but if you haven't done it yet, brine your turkey for 24 hours. You brine that sucker, you submerge it in water, apple juice, wine, rosemary. You just throw apples, oranges, throw everything you can to suck that moisture in. And then you got to inject it with the brine. Inject it. And then throughout the whole entire process, you have got to brine that turkey and make sure that you keep feeding that moisture to that turkey throughout it. And if you don't do that, you're going to get a dry turkey. And I have learned this, and I am very proud of my turkey so far. I'm like 4 for 4 on a quality turkey, and it's pretty hard because I've eaten some dry turkeys in my day.
I have as well. I'm not going to lie though, Matt, you're making me hungry.
I tell you what, man, someday we got to make that happen. Now, I have a story that was not a successful one.
Oh.
All right. Well, so I had a friend in college that was one of my best friends, and I will leave his name out of this, but besides you right now, I probably have never had as much of a brother in my life as this guy.
Dang.
And we were going to fry a turkey. And everybody has seen the horror stories and the fires and all this stuff on these. Yeah. Well, we had run out of oil, and we needed to go get some more oil. So a guy was actually still harvesting, and he said, "Hey, I got a jug of oil in the shop that I've been using." So we run to the shop, and I stay in the car. My friend grabs the oil, puts it in the back of the truck. We go back to his garage to do this. Well, I go inside to kind of check on things, and I made the joke to all the women that I was going to go outside and make sure that they didn't burn the place down. Well, as I'm going outside, my friend is
a little foreshadowing there, maybe.
Yes, he is getting ready to pour this jug of what he thinks is oil in the fryer. And I said, "Hey, whoa, 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 buddy, that you might read that label. That doesn't look like oil to me."
Oh gosh, where is this going? This is starting to worry me.
And he's like, "What?" And he would look at it, and he was getting ready to dump pesticide into the fryer. And he didn't, but it was within a second of that happening. Like, if I wouldn't have walked out when I did, who knows what would have happened? I don't know if it would have exploded the house. I do not know if we just would have all been poisoned later. Like, who knows what would have happened?
I doubt any outcome.
Nothing would have been good.
Results in a happy Thanksgiving.
It would have been not happy Thanksgiving. And it could have been disastrous. But I caught it. We got it corrected. We got some more oil. I would say the disaster was averted, and we had a really nice meal, and everyone ate a fried turkey. And I will say, a good Cajun fried turkey, buddy, there's nothing better.
Oh, anything Cajun.
Go get it.
Anything Cajun.
So good. Now, I don't know about you, but I'm a dark meat guy.
Okay.
I love dark meat. It's got more moisture in a lot of times. But last year, my brining process and my constant injecting throughout the process, I made a pretty good one in an oven that was not dry, and the white meat tasted pretty good too.
I'm very impressed. Well, maybe I have to rethink my stance on turkey being one of the worst holiday meals ever.
Come over Christmas. We'll do it. We'll do a live episode, or we'll do something fun like that where we're both there.
Something.
And we'll make it happen.
Because, I'm telling you, maybe I've just been missing out all these years. My whole life, I've thought, why couldn't the Pilgrims have had ribeyes on Thanksgiving? Like, why isn't that?
It would have made some sense.
It makes sense to me. I don't know. I don't understand. Like, I've never understood the appeal of turkey. You remember the one thing I was always intrigued by, not that I'd want to eat it, but I was always. You remember when we were kids and John Madden was a big deal, you know, and he would broadcast the Thanksgiving game and then
turducken.
Disclaimer, as much as I just said that, I have no idea why I was intrigued by it. Maybe it's just the name, because I've had duck before and I wasn't that impressed with duck. And I'm not a big turkey fanatic, so there's probably nothing appealing about that. Why couldn't we just go to like name. Texas Day Brazil or something on Thanksgiving Day? Like somebody, I'm just gonna sit there with my plate on my belly on the couch and just come by and carve me off more steak. And I'll eat until I get the meat sweats and I'll pass out. I'll watch football, pass out. To me, that sounds like a great day. But
I tell you what, that might be the number one day ever. Yeah. All right. I gotta ask you, buddy. Like, I know your diet doesn't necessarily align with the carb friendlies, but there's two different types of potatoes.
Okay.
There's a sweet potatoes and regular potatoes. I am out on sweet potatoes.
Out on sweet potatoes.
Never liked them. I'm sorry, listeners. If you like them, I have more power to you. You can have my helping. However, I've just never been a sweet potato guy, but good old mashed potatoes and gravy with some white gravy. Oh my gosh. I just want to tear up thinking about it. It makes me so excited.
One of the things that I miss, people ask me, you know, what do you miss? What do you miss eating? Well, I can tell you, I wish Thanksgiving, I got a free pass to eat cheeseburgers, man. I miss cheeseburgers, but I love potatoes. I love potatoes in every form. I could spend the next hour talking about the intricacies and preparation methods and my just total passionate love for potatoes and everything they encompass.
They're so
good. Sweet potatoes falls in there. I'm a sweet potato guy. And you know, people obviously at Thanksgiving, they fix them like candied yams. You know, it's almost a dessert more so than a potato, at least.
Put those marshmallows on top of them.
Just caked with that like brown sugar glaze and melted marshmallows on top.
They look good.
Oh, they look good. They smell good and they taste good. I can't eat them anymore. I walk by, get my little fix as I walk by. I kind of smell them, drift over to the celery and dry Sahara Desert flavorless turkey.
That you just gotta add gravy to, buddy. Now, I'm very sorry, but I have to talk about two things. And I've yet to get anything negative sent to me. Have you?
No, I haven't. Of course.
However, I think now is the time. And I'm sorry, listeners, because I know the people that are passionate about this, they're ride or die on their green
bean. I know where you're going. I know where you're going with this.
Green bean casserole is one of the most controversial foods that I have ever been around in my life. You either love it and would bathe in it, or you don't want to be in the same room as it.
I think somebody went, hey, you see these green beans over here? How can we make that worse? I know.
Yes. Yes.
Let's lather it in cream of mushroom soup and then throw some crunchy croutons on top.
Hey, the one thing that was going to be healthy during Thanksgiving meal.
Right.
Let's kick that out and add some gravy to it, some cream, and some fried onions. Then everything has a caloric value of 2,000 or more.
Right. I don't understand it. I'm not going to lie to you. That's another thing at Thanksgiving that people get way in on that I've never understood, at least in my family growing up. People would gather around and speak of the green bean casserole in hushed and reverent tones.
Yes.
This must be the best thing, literally, since chocolate ice cream. Lather me up a big scoop of that stuff. And I didn't like it when I was young. And it's like, you know, all of us when we're young have a, we'll call it a naive palate. You don't like certain things. You acquire different tastes as you get older. Taste buds change. And so I remember kind of being in college and thinking, I want to be a grown up, you know, I want to act like I wasn't at the kids table anymore. I'm like, I can try this green bean casserole. And if nothing else,
man up.
Maybe I can lather it over the turkey jerky. And I just, it wasn't working. It was just as bad. It's something about the texture of it too. Kind of a creamy, gritty, crunchy. It doesn't work together. I don't know. And I'll say it's not just, we're not picking on Thanksgiving necessarily. People love oysters. People love oysters. They talk about raw oysters. I get it. I get the appeal. It's fun.
That was my other one.
I've had phlegm come out my nose and get in the sand, and I don't have any desire to eat that either.
No, and they stink so bad. And they smell. They smell up the whole table. I'm like, what's that smell? Oh, it's either the green bean casseroles or it's the oysters.
Or it's the oysters. Oh, hey, snot on a rock, everybody. Have fun with that.
But here's the deal. Like, people are so addicted to those oysters.
I know. I get it.
In town. Okay. I get it.
Don't you think some of that stuff, though, is like people that have to put hot sauce on everything? At some point, you're just showing off. You're just showing, like, you're not really enjoying. You can't really be enjoying that. Like, your eyes are bleeding. You're not enjoying that hot sauce. Like, you're just doing that to show off. Just tone it down, man. Just tone it down.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I don't get it, but I appreciate people that do. And here's the deal.
Each their own.
Like green bean casserole today on Thanksgiving Day, I hope you have 3 or 4 helpings.
Mm-hmm.
And if you like sweet potatoes, go for it.
Get go for it. Dive in.
Too. And those oysters, man, just hold your nose and eat them, and it's great, I'm sure. But, you know, it's just not for me.
You know, I'll throw it out there. There's things I like. I love fried okra. Not everybody likes fried okra.
Oh, it's good stuff.
Oh, I do love pickled okra. Man.
That's my jam.
Oh, you know, there's a lot of stuff that I eat probably that people be like, ugh, why would you like that? But then there's some stuff that I've encountered over the years that I know people really enjoy that I'm perplexed by. Thanksgiving is pretty much a smorgasbord of several of those things. A cornucopia, if you will, of foods that I am a little bit iffy on.
I'm going to tell you, Karen McCrory, you have one of her Thanksgiving meals, and I think that I think your thoughts towards that might change a little
bit. Change my whole perspective. Hey, I'm game.
I think so.
I'm open to new experiences, so I would be in there. I would.
Hey, but I'm also game to some ribeyes on Thanksgiving too, so I like that idea too.
I like that. That sounds good to me.
Well, good deal, man. Hey, we have a lot to be thankful for. We're very thankful for episodes 4 and making this happen today, and I'm really excited because it's now the time to talk about a little thing that we always like to talk about, and that's what's on your playlist, buddy.
I can't wait. I'm excited for my daughter to come home. You know, as she gets out in the world and she's in college, she always manages to find some new and entertaining stuff for me to listen to. And some of it is not fire, and some of it is. And so I can't wait
I see
to
what
hear
you did
what
there.
See what I got? Yeah, we're bringing something back right there. All right, all right. Again, this week, again, people send me some snaps of their playlist. People are just in on, you know, kind of listening to music. I think people are getting a kick out of the fact that sometimes we all kind of listen to some of the same stuff. You know, you always think, man, but I'm the only weirdo maybe that's got this on my phone, or that I'm the only one that plays this, you know, when I'm going down the road to a livestock show. Actually, it's, I think, kind of universal. I have fun talking about it. I think folks have fun sending me stuff. And so here we are back again. What's on your playlist, Matt? Now, we're going to start off a little bit different this time. Last week, on last week's episode, episode 3, if you haven't listened to it, go back and check it out. We brought up some songs Matt hadn't heard, and he was going to listen to them and give us a little report. Matt, what do you got? What do you think?
Well, there were two songs that I was supposed to listen to, and I listened to them both. And the way we're going to do this is kind of a scale out of 10. All right. 10 being the highest, one being the lowest.
Okay.
And with that being said, I respect you very much and your ability to like, and your right to like songs like Chloe.
I appreciate that.
To me, that gets a solid 4 out of 10.
Okay. Okay. It's okay. That's okay.
It brought me back to the late 90s when music was so bad. The bands in the late 90s were not good. And
that's why we don't remember it.
Because we had to, because they were new and trendy.
Yeah.
Boy, they weren't very good. And that just reminds me of just bad boy band.
Oh, yeah.
Not the NSYNC and stuff like this, just the kind of the rocky, peppy.
Yeah.
Late 90s stuff.
Maybe so bad it's good type music.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Okay. That's so 4 out of 10. Now, our buddy from Texas sent me that song, Barrel Racer Land, and I listened to that sucker and I really liked it. And I've added it to my playlist and I gave that a solid 9.2 out of 10. I like it. I dig it. I like what it's about. I think it's good. I think that there's some accuracy in it. And I think it's pretty cool. So hey, I enjoyed it.
That's a good one. Well, I'm glad that one made the cut. You know, and if 50% of the stuff we talk about on the show makes the cut, that's pretty good odds, really. That's not bad.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, hey, you got any new ones to talk about this week, my man?
I do have some. I do have a couple. And you probably got all these, but if you don't, check them out. So I thought I'd start off with two that are, I guess, in my mind, and man, they're different. I get it, but they're what I consider on my serious play. Like, I'm getting pumped up. I'm getting excited. This gets me going. Okay. The first one's going to surprise you a little bit. Maybe there was a song that we listened to on the bus when we were going to contest every time. It was one of the songs that I grew up with, and it got, for whatever reason, this song just got me pumped, got me going. And so when I would go to work every morning, this tells you how goofy I am, I would fire this song up. When we got on the bus to go to a contest, when we were doing ag stuff, when we pulled out of town, this is the first song we played. And it's still a song that's still on my pump up list today. And it's Midnight Rider, but it's the Willie Nelson version. It's the Willie Nelson, which you wouldn't think would be, you don't maybe associate Willie Nelson with big pump up music. Hey, go check out Willie Nelson, his version of Midnight Rider. It's got a little drum kick to it. Willie feels it. You feel it. You're like, oh, man, Willie's got his back's up against a wall. He's going to do whatever it takes. It's a great song. Midnight Rider's a great song, no matter Allman Brothers, whoever plays it. It's an awesome song. But the Willie Nelson version's always been pretty near and dear to my heart. I think it comes from, you've probably never seen this movie. When I was a kid, there was a movie that I loved called The Electric Horseman. It had Robert Redford in it and Jane Fonda. And Robert Redford's this rodeo cowboy, and he's won, like, you know, five all-around championships at the finals. And eventually kind of gets old and broke down, and like too many of those guys, especially in that era, in the 70s, you know, they'd kind of get wore out. He gets into being an alcoholic a little bit, and he signs on to be a spokesman for a breakfast cereal. And he's the breakfast cereal cowboy, and he's doing these appearances. Well, he's drunk, most of them. He's falling off his horse. He's not showing up to these deals. Well, he gets to this, they're putting on this big thing in Las Vegas, big trade show, and he gets there, and he's supposed to appear on stage with a horse named Rising Star, who was the all-time winningest thoroughbred racehorse. And so here they are, all-time winningest cowboy, all-time winningest racehorse, and they're supposed to be on stage with these dancing girls and these lights and this music, wearing these light-up suits. And he just says, the heck with it. I'm done. Like, I'm done living the public life. And he notices this horse has been all shot up with, like, tranquilizers and bute, and like they're pumping him full of steroids to muscle him up just for show. And he's a horseman, so he kind of gets all this, and he's like, that's enough of this. Like, I'm taking this horse and we're leaving. And he steals this $1 million racehorse, and that song comes on, and the beat of it comes on as he's like, I've had enough. And you see it. Robert Redford, great actor, by the way. For younger generation maybe doesn't understand. Robert Redford, great actor. You see it over his face. He's done. He's fed up. He plugs in his lights, and his suit lights up. The horse lights up, and they ride right off the stage, right out of the casino, and they go running down the Vegas Strip with this song playing. And I remember being a kid and just thinking, that's just maybe about the coolest thing I've ever seen in my life.
Oh, man.
Like, this cowboy stealing this horse in the middle of Las Vegas. Anyway, that song had me hooked from a young age, and to this day, there'll be times I hear the first beats of that song, and if I'm in the right situation or the right mood, the hair literally will stand up on the back of my neck. Like, it probably means nothing to anybody else, but ask anybody who knows me, that's a biggie for me. The second one that is a big one is Dr. Dre and Snoop Dogg, Next Episode. I love that song, man. It's awesome. That one hits. It's awesome. I love to have that one on there. And then there's two others I'm going to throw in there that I think are my fun songs. Hey, we like to listen to a little fun music. We always had a going to the deal playlist and a going home playlist. Going home was the fun music. That's when you're laughing and cutting up. You're not serious. You're having a good time. Either you're celebrating a win or you're trying to survive a loss and you're just trying to feel good. And so one of my all-time favorites, and I know you like this one too probably, Casey Donahue, White Trash Story.
Oh, yeah.
And I probably identify a little too much with that one. And then Don't Mind If I Do by Mac Miller. So it's kind of newer-ish. We would say maybe it's fire.
Uh-huh.
Or has the riz, whatever that may be.
It's lit, man.
It's lit. I don't know what other cool adjectives we could describe it with.
It's all we can do.
Check those out. Those are some new additions. Maybe to some people's playlists. Those are ones that I get a big kick out of, whether I'm going to a show, working in the barn, or maybe being an old guy just riding my mower around.
Willie Nelson by himself, Poncho and Lefty.
Oh, yeah.
I talked about this. I love songs that tell a story.
Or him and Ray Charles, Seven Spanish Angels.
Oh, yeah. That's beautiful. It's really pretty.
When I'm in my truck alone, I like to sing both parts to that one, which is also, if you're one of those people that like to sing both parts, Picture by Kid Rock and Sheryl Crow. I really have a good time singing both parts.
I agree. All right. The one that I want to share today, though, is pretty cool. And it is one by Jason Boland and the Stragglers, Gallo del Cielo.
Ooh.
Have you ever heard that one?
You know, I've got to look. I know I don't have that one on my phone.
It is great. It's a story of this Mexican guy who stole this amazing rooster that was in cockfights. And okay. He stole this rooster and he goes to America basically and fights it in all these cockfights and tries to win money. And he piles up all this money and he's in one last fight and he puts all of his money down. And I'm not going to give it away, but it's a good song. It's got a story. You listen to it.
I'll have to check that out.
Man, it's just got a really beautiful just music behind it, but it's really neat and it tells a story. It's cool. It's really good. Check it out.
I'm going to check that one out.
Pretty good, man.
Awesome. I will say that I did hear another one and I'll credit TikTok. Okay. I'll credit TikTok. This one came across my TikTok feed. I traced it down to YouTube, but I can't get it downloaded anywhere. So if somebody knows where to get this version of this particular song, you reach out and let us know. Cause I love this version. Cody Johnson, who I think does an awesome job covering songs anyway.
Yeah, for sure.
Cody Johnson does a cover of Red Dirt Road by Brooks and Dunn. Okay. YouTube it, check it out, because it's not actually him and Brooks and Dunn doing it. It's just him and his band, like sitting in a diner somewhere in Texas, just playing this, and it's all acoustic. And man, it is my favorite version of that song I've ever heard. It's so freaking awesome. If there was a way I could download it, I'll guarantee it'd be on rotation, just on repeat right now in my truck, because I can't get enough of it. I saw it on TikTok, and like for the next 20 minutes, I went down a rabbit hole trying to find that particular version of that song. It's freaking awesome. Cody Johnson, Red Dirt Road, but it's just him. It's just him and his band. It's not him and Brooks and Dunn, because I think there is a version where Cody Johnson sings it with Brooks and Dunn, but this is just him and the band playing it somewhere. They just got on like ball caps and t-shirts and stuff and are just playing it like looks like in a little bar or diner there somewhere. Man, it's freaking awesome.
Every February I kind of go on a kick because February is a busy time for some ag teachers.
Oh yeah, of course.
So I go on a kick and usually try to find some old country to latch on to and things like that. In the last few years, my February band has been Brooks and Dunn. Yeah. But one of my favorite things to listen to on YouTube is the Brooks and Dunn specials that are done by people doing Brooks and Dunn songs covers.
Yeah.
And they are so good. And their songs were so phenomenal anyway. And then all these covers come on and sometimes they join them, sometimes they don't. Man, those guys, they were a special duo. And
they were. And you know,
I really enjoyed them.
You kind of forget that. Like sometimes, you know, some of those people from our, like that 90s era country, that 90s country, it just was hit after hit after hit. And people just making great music that at the time you're like, well, this is awesome. This is pretty fun. And then you get out of that and you're like, well, man, this sucks. That where'd all that good music go? And you revisit later and you're like, man, I'd forgot. Like Brooks and Dunn had all these good songs. Mm-hmm. Alan Jackson has all these good songs, you know, and there's just so many of those artists that just kept cranking them out during that era that when you go back now and listen, you're just like, gosh, I'd forgot these songs were this good. And there was this many of them.
Last week, Cody was talking about how we really like to reminisce and really kind of go back in time. And I'd like to just spend 1 second talking about a little guy called Joe Diffie. When you thinking about, and John Deere Green was my high school song. John Deere Green was my high school song.
Oh, and
funny fact, I grew up underneath a water tower, basically within 100 yards of a water tower. It was out in the middle of nowhere and on top of a hill. And my mom complained about her water pressure so much that they gave her a water tower near her house. And everybody was like, because I loved that song so much, they were just waiting for me to put
climb up there
and John Deere Green up there. And I never did. I one time kind of scoped it out and looked at it. And I realized really quickly, that's not for me.
I think they're harder to climb than a guy thinks they are. I guess.
Yeah.
Well, I don't think you can get to the ladder for a while.
Yeah. You can't get to the ladder for, it's like 12 foot up
there. Right. Right.
So you can't really, I don't know how they get there. I would not have access to it. I do not have the hops that one would think I would have.
Oh man.
So, you know, and then
I know that for those of you who know us and those of you watching along on the video, I would guess that most of you probably assume that Matt and I had to turn down lucrative contracts in the NBA.
Yes.
To pursue our livestock and teaching careers, but disappointingly, it's just not true. We just probably were not the high caliber basketball players that one might think we would be.
Yeah, I had a lot of heart, and I was the guy that didn't spend a lot of time jumping. I was more that diving on the floor after ball and basketballs. Yeah. But, you know, I think I have those kind of players too, my man.
You know, it's what makes the world go round. Somebody's got to be – it's like in hockey, right? Like somebody's got to be the thumper. Somebody's got to be the thumper in hockey. Somebody's got to be the guy that's not afraid to throw the gloves on the ice and go, nope, you're not checking my buddy. You're not going to – you're not going to go in and go in on our goalie. Somebody's got to be the thumper. In basketball, yeah. Somebody has to be that guy that dives after loose balls and wraps up people's feet. Like, everybody's got to have those.
For sure, for sure.
Football team's got to have a kicker.
Hey, speaking of football kickers, this past week, my Mizzou Tigers, they put a nail in the coffin in the Florida Gators.
And I'm pretty saw
excited
that.
About that.
I saw that. Dude, college football's been crazy this year. Man, I'll be honest, I don't follow college football near as closely as I used to. But just what I catch, just the little bit that I see, it seems like every time I turn around, somebody's talking about, man, this team that was, you know, that's, and then I think of it's like, oh, this team's a great team. They're probably going to go to that college the playoff system, they're getting beat by somebody. And then I'm like, well, maybe that team's pretty good. And then I turn around and they got beat the next week by somebody you didn't expect. It's just crazy.
Well, when you think about it too, what's so cool is a lot of these schools that are in the top 25 come from Aggie lands, right?
Of course, yeah.
You know, you have all, of course, Oklahoma, Oklahoma State, Texas, Mizzou is actually in Midwest and they're in the top 10 right now in the United States. Ohio State, Michigan State. Now, not all these are ag schools, but they're still in
ag. They're still from agriculture. I mean,
you know,
pretty big agriculture.
Georgia and Alabama. We can't, we could go on and on and on, but it's kind of cool how when you go to these weekend shows in the winter time, people are pretty, they're tuning in.
That's right.
And they're paying attention to it. And it's cool. And it's a fun time of year. There's a lot that could shake down in the Big Ten in the next couple of weeks to kind of shake up the things in the national championship scene. So I'll be watching that, but it's a fun time and it's really good.
You know, Matt, through Judging Pro, I'm lucky enough I get to go to some of these contests and get to help put a few things on. I get to help be an official different times. And that means at different times I'm in the reasons room listening to kids talking. And you and I both get to be ringside at some of these shows. One of the things that I thought we'd talk about, and it leads me to our off-topic topic that tonight is sort of on topic.
For sure.
So our off-topic topic that's on topic. Everybody got that? We can play it back if you need to. And what that really is, this time it deals with the livestock industry and specifically the livestock industry that I think sometimes is pretty separated from what we have in the show ring. But I get in those reasons rooms and I hear one thing consistently. And that's kids that come in and tell me that this particular animal is industry driven or better meets industry parameters. At which I almost always have to hold back a little bit of a giggle because that 1,650 pound steer probably is pretty far outside industry standards.
For sure.
And that 98 to 115 pound market goat is about 60 pounds heavier than industry standards.
Mm-hmm.
And that gilt that's fuzzy legged and huge skulled and mega big in her tail root and all the cool trendy stuff we like to talk about, absolutely, positively, without a doubt, unwaveringly looks nothing like sows in the actual swine production industry. And so I want to know from you, and I hope and I fully expect that we'll get some feedback, might even say some blowback from listeners about their take on how the industry relates to the stuff that you and I and a lot of our listeners are pretty passionate about, which is what we'd call show stock, probably. What do you think, Matt?
Well, recently I had the opportunity to visit a commercial hog operation in Fair Oaks, Indiana, and they have Fair Oaks Farms, and you can tour it and over, you can look over it, and it's a really good educational place. I highly recommend it, and for people to take kids that don't necessarily know much about agriculture.
Oh, and there's a huge disconnect between our kids today and how hog production actually works. Because if you stop and think about it, you and I, Matt, are probably in the generation, maybe the last generation, where folks would have been farrowing out some hogs at home.
Yes.
And not a show pigs, but
just sows.
Just farrowing out sows to make feeder pigs or fat hogs. And that probably is done. I know my exposure to it, which is pretty limited because I didn't grow up in a hog family. My exposure to it tells me that it is a little different in terms of management and efficiency than what you and I are as show pig guys.
For sure. And when you think about it, it's those sows and that, and they have 5,000 sows or 3,000 sows, it's maternal, maternal, maternal.
Yeah, yeah.
And this place had a pig that farrowed a couple of years ago that had 35 babies born, and they were able to save every single one of them by grafting them on. They average 15 babies a sow. And
how many, think about how many show pigs do you get, Matt? What's your average litter size on show pigs?
You know, it's not that high.
It's not 15.
This year
it's 30.
10, okay? But usually it's around 6.
Right.
And so there's other things that go into that. But when you think about just phenotypically what those things look like, you know, they're probably more looser made, looser in their skeleton. They're probably a little easier topped at times. They don't have as much top width with the pin set. And they're definitely frailer made.
Well, I'm just going to stop you. You're taking the nice route. I'm just going to say they're ugly.
They
and all the things that you and I try to build in show pigs in terms of phenotypic look and some of those traits, big, stout, wide, burly, good pastured, good, you know, certain joint angles, stout skulls. These things are the opposite of that. They are down and coon footed. They're usually very, very loose in their skeleton. They're weak and what we would consider weak topped, right?
For sure.
And let's be honest, they are flat. They are narrow. They are skinny. We're not concerned about big, wide, stout ones in the actual commercial swine industry. We're worried about how many pigs can she have when she lays down in farrows, and how many parities can she do that for? Because at the end of the day, we're about numbers of hogs produced, not necessarily, and then people are going to criticize me for saying this. They don't get paid anymore because they've got a big loin eye. They get paid because they sell a lot of loin eyes. Does that make sense?
For sure.
And I'm sure there's some niche production, but I'm not talking about niche production here. I'm not talking about somebody that farrows out 200 sows and it has a niche boutique market. I'm talking about big corporate hog farms that crank out millions of swine a year that, let's be honest, are not necessarily in the pig business. They're in the meat industry business. And the animals that produce those things, and I will tell you, here's my personal opinion. People may argue with me. I think today's hogs, with what is winning the show ring, which I love, by the way, which I'm not bad about. I love them. We raise them. I love them. We are into my kind of hogs right now. But my personal opinion is they are about as far removed from commercial swine production as you can be. I think it's the equivalent of a Ferrari and a Ford Festiva. Like,
for sure.
They both serve within practicality the same purpose. to get you from point A to point B. But one of them's real, real fun to watch and probably not very practical to drive down the road. And the other one gets you from point A to point B, but it's not necessarily people are going to stand around and clap watching it happen.
You know, I'm grateful to the people in that industry for what they do. It's so much work and labor intensive and it's so hard. And, but we have to realize, guys, in the reasons room, that is what I would call a faux pas.
It's I would agree 100%.
Now, I took some pictures of those pigs in that environment because I wanted to be able to show my kids what flat sided is, what narrow is, because I teach a lot with pictures.
And a lot of things to talk about skeletally there.
Probably. Yeah. So my son Leo can talk about and understand what width is and just, you know, being opened up is and what is not opened up. And maybe even the word practical. Now, if you use the term practical, I understand that a little bit more in terms of industry-wise, more practical female. I wouldn't necessarily go as far and say maybe is more industry-driven, right? Okay.
And I can probably live with that because there is a line within our show guilds of practicality where because really when we're trying to raise show animals in general, I don't care if you're raising show pigs or you're raising real clubby bred cattle or even seed stock production within the cattle industry, you're going to give up some things that just the normal average, you're going to have to go a little further. It's going to be a little more management intensive than what just the ordinary average cow calf commercial guy does, period. It's just you're everything you do that tries to get one more notch higher is one more rung further and one more level harder to produce it. And that's my opinion. I could be, and we'll circle to the cattle here next, probably, because I think that's where we can talk about a species that is the closest
for sure
to commercial industry standards. Now, does it completely match up?
No.
Notch for notch? Probably not across the board. And I would venture to say that the bulls that we've talked about thus far that get us pumped up, you know, in terms of raising hairy, cool club calf type calves that, you know, like I said, are the Ferrari version that are fun to go watch and clap and all that stuff, that maybe the cost of production, the level and intensity of management has to be a little higher than a guy that's just got a bunch of black, white faced cows out there, bringing them to the neighbor's Hereford bull, getting whatever calves he gets, selling them by the pound as feeders. Obviously, there's work and there's an intense amount of management in that as well. But things tend to happen a little smoother. Nature tends to take care of things a little better when we don't maybe have quite as high a level of expectation for them too. And when we compare, you know, we'll talk about sheep and goats, and I think a lot of that comes more from the market side of things where it's a size, it's a weight, it's a type that's so different sheep and goat wise versus what the actual market is. Cattle, you know, there's still seed stock producers in the cattle world that can go both ways, right? They're for selling sure. Maybe to commercial, you know, they're selling their seed stock bulls or maybe high-end replacement females to commercial producers who are trying to raise elite commercial cattle. I don't see that in the hog side of the world. And I know there's probably going to be some breed associations that maybe have something to say about that, or maybe some seed stock producers in the hog side. Matt, you raise registered Berks. You raise registered Chesters. You've had registered Durocs. We have too. How many commercial hog guys come and knocking on your door and saying, hey, I really want to do this three breed rotational terminal cross. What do you got for Duroc boars? That don't exist anymore. And anybody, hey, if it does exist, please tell me where, because I don't think those big mega production facilities are interested in the kind of hogs that all of us like or want to produce, because I don't think they fit into their plan very good. And so now, granted, I'm on a soapbox here a little bit, but you know, I think that we can do things as seed stock or show hog production to help expand our markets a little bit. Look at like branded the Berkshire pork deal. I've heard rumors that they're trying to come up with something like that on the Duroc end as well. And if those people got together and come up with a marketing plan like that, I'm sure it would be successful. And there's obviously niche markets, but in terms of having a Bigfoot or a big impact in the actual consumer-driven industry portion of that side, I think it's very, very small and minute on the pork side of things. But I think on the beef side of things, it still matters.
When we were even in high school, and you looked around just the commercial outfits on the side of the road and the highways, boy, those cows were a lot of times broken topped and they weren't straight in their lines. And boy, they didn't have much body capacity. A lot of them were harder doing, higher flank type of females.
Kind of hard bodied.
When you look
pretty slick, short tailed.
For sure. When you look right now in Missouri, in Illinois, in Indiana, on your way down to Texas, and when you look at these commercial herds and outfits, you know, phenotypically, everything kind of matches anymore.
It does.
And everything has some body, has some stayability, and there's, and they're practical. I know that that term we just talked about, but they do. But I will also say that in one or two generations, could produce a club calf.
Yeah,
you know,
produce something that has viable,
that has some quality. Value on a county level, I think could do it. And they probably won't be crippled. Okay. They, you know, they'll probably have some value there. But I think when we talk about seed stock, we talk about those things. I am so impressed with these purebred breeders doing such a good job of putting value in functional, sound, productive cattle with some body and some width that is good numbered as well. And it makes me really excited. You and I both had the opportunity to go to Perry's a few years ago, and those bulls, boy, they got you excited and they got you pumped up about them. And, and there's a lot of seed stock producers right now. And I'll go back to this. I had a friend growing up that raised limousines. And when they started taking those, you know, hard muscled limousines to Angus, man, those things hit. And those things were, became all of a sudden really, really wide, really, really stout bone, rugged, and huge belly, deep flanks. And they were so awesome. I mean, as good as you can make them. And as an industry right now, I think we're as close to practicality on both sides of it. Now, are there some really, really dense, really, really opened up, really big topped ones out there? 100%. Okay.
You cruise the countryside, wherever you're at in the world, it doesn't matter. Extreme southeast down in Florida, extreme northwest part of the United States, up in, you know, kind of Montana, Wyoming, the Dakotas, or you get down in Texas or anywhere in between, there's going to be good ones. And there's going to be stuff you drive by that you can tell is pretty ranchy. And those animals are probably nature's kind of being the keep cull factor there. But I think by and large, people that have paid attention to management, I think there's a reason that we see this homogenization of types of cattle. Because I think people have started to understand these are the type of cattle that are, you know, and we've used this word several times, practical or have practicality. But really what that really means to me is they're more economically viable. They're more feasible to produce and manage. And that's where, you know, granted, the margins are pretty thin sometimes, but if I'm going to have profit and if I'm going to make it, these are the kind that are going to make it easier on me to do that. And I think that's where I think some of that has been rewarded in the market. And then some of it is just, they are more practical. They are more functional. And that lends itself to a certain kind and body type. And it just so happens to line up with the stuff that we think is kind of cool in the show ring too. And so I agree 100%. I think cattle are the things. Now I know there's staunch traditional cow-calf commercial people out there is going to say that calf that wins such and such big show has nothing to do with the beef industry. Yeah, he does. Like, he's still going to grade choice. He's still going to yield well. That calf's still going to have an above average ribeye, loin eye. he's still going to be incredibly terminal and somewhat meet industry parameters hanging on the hook, and probably out of genetics that enabled him to do that. And so does he look like all of them in the feedlot? Probably not. But is he still going to do some things that hit the industry specs and do the things they're supposed to do? Yeah. And so, and I don't know that we can say that necessarily for the carcass type that the average show bearer would have versus the average carcass running down the rail in a big packing facility. And I know beyond a shadow of a doubt, when you start talking about the as big as we get some show lambs today, Weathers, as juicy as we get them. And hey, I get it. I love that too. I do. I'm not bashing. I'm not saying, hey, these sheep are too fat. I love where they're at. But let's face it, sheep are a cutability animal, and the packer don't want that fat on there. And they also don't want a sheep that's much over, you know, live weight, 120 pounds.
They don't.
We're feeding these things to 170. And they're a killer 170.
They are
fresh. They are amazing. Like, I am blown
big, away. Big racks.
Oh, my God. Like, can't span them. Cannot get my hand across them. It is just mind-boggling to me. But that's not – you're going to take a hit. Load a truckload of them up and take them. You're going to take a hit. You're going to lose money on them. If you're just selling them as fat lambs, same thing with goats. Man, if you know anything about the goat market, they want them things about 60 pounds, right? 50, 60 pounds. And you start getting them much over that, they start getting docked. And I can tell you what 120-pound weather goat's worth. Not a lot, not very much.
When you talk about what the industry standard is right now in Missouri, there's more haired sheep than there are wool sheep.
Yeah.
And those Katahdins and things like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're so good in just being good mothers, their maternal traits, fertile as they can possibly be.
Oh, yeah.
And they can put numbers on the ground. And if you're doing that consistently, you can actually make some money. And I have some friends that in the past have raised Katahdins to feed their other sheep addiction. Okay.
Right.
To make it happen. And when you think about that, like, you know, as much as I love them and the sheep deal is so good right now, and those things are so powerful and they're just so good.
Well, and make no mistake, I don't think we're having this talk to say one is better than the other. Because I think both those things have their place.
For sure.
But I think obviously when we're producing animals as meat animals for consumer consumption, and the industry, the parameters, the consumers drive it towards one specific way, and we're producing something completely different, well, there is a disconnect there. And it's an obvious disconnect. But I'll also tell you, I think it's because in some of those species, we've understood that we have to stay in with parameters here. And this, we don't encompass a big enough part of the market to really make a difference. Mm-hmm. So let's make this entertainment.
And you and I talk all the time. Like, we do not like ones that are common.
No.
Do not give us a common one that can just walk all day. Like, hey, because if I can get one that's extremely stout and opened up that can walk all day, I'm a user. And
right.
I love
but to get that one that's extremely wide and can walk all day, they've probably got 2 or 3 litter mates that couldn't.
Yeah.
That are big and wide and stout, massive, that aren't square, or that got culled out because they're outside their skeleton, or they're bad legged, or they're down front. In order to hit those home runs, you got to swing for the fence, and that means you're gonna miss a lot.
Yes. And,
but the nice thing is, once you look at it as, hey, we're doing this for fun. We're doing this to try to create these incredibly hard to create, unusual creatures. And we can free ourselves a little bit of the bonds of they have to fit within, they got to lay down and have 30 babies. Mm-hmm. And they got to almost have 3 parodies a year. And they've got to, you know, once we kind of say, hey, that's a little silly, because that's like saying, well, you know, this NASCAR has got to be able to get 40 miles the gallon or we can't race it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I have to be able to haul a family of 7 in this Formula One car or it can't enter the race. If we start putting those parameters on things like that, that are more fun and entertainment based, Well, pretty soon the fun drizzles right out of it. And you might as well just get in your caravan, minivan, and go cruise around the Walmart parking lot, because that's essentially what you're doing. And I guess in my mind, that's what the show deal always has been to me. And I know it started off something different. I know it started off, let's bring our best ones to town. Let's highlight our genetics. Let's celebrate these operations and ranches or that are doing it better. If we really were going to do it by basics and we really cared about some of that stuff, we literally would just walk those hogs down an aisle. We would weigh them. We would scan them.
That'd be the show.
And that would be it. We would not care about tall fronted. We wouldn't care about big skulls. I wouldn't be back there in the pen boning legs and painting stuff black and painting stuff white and all that great, cool stuff that we could do, because there would be no need for that, because there's not a big demand for hog hair in the consumer market, as it turns out. And so we literally would weigh those things up, and we would scan loin eyes and back fat and some of that kind of stuff, and we would figure out some sort of an effective efficiency number.
Mm-hmm.
And the most desirable number would win, and the least desirable number would lose. But what would the fun in that be? How crappy of a show would that be? Like, where's the fun in that? And so, and I'm not saying that's how it should all be. We're not condoning any one point of view. We're not saying that anything has to be a certain way or not. We're just calling it like we see it, because probably me, as much as either one of us, that's one of those things that it's like nails on a chalkboard when somebody tells me a sow, boy, she's just so industry. She's so industry driven. What industry are you talking about? What industry are you referring to? Because the industry I think of, that sow wouldn't last a day in, and they wouldn't want her. And the sow that would last a day in that deal, I sure as heck wouldn't put in my barn, because I can tell you what her pigs are. I might have 30 of them. Guess how many of them I could sell? Zero. Because nobody's in the market for those.
I had a friend that was a friend of my dad's that had a big sow herd that was a commercial herd, and they basically had 1,000 sows, I think. And anyway, every year his son wanted to show pigs, and they couldn't have off pigs on the side. So what they did was they would take two of those sows and breed them to a boar that was from a boar stud and used some high dollar semen. And I asked him, did that ever work out? And he says, nope, not once. Because that genetic line was so much one way.
Yeah.
You weren't going to stouten it up nearly.
No.
To make a difference and make an impact. And so he never got along pretty good, but it was a great science experiment, you know, nonetheless, and see what you can make. But, and that's what they were limited to, and they did all right. And it was kind of cool to see them raise things that and present things that were out of a commercial facility anyway. Mm-hmm. But those hogs just don't cut it with what we're doing in the show pig industry. But you know what? It's hard. And if it wasn't hard, these things wouldn't go for as much as they do.
That's right. And I said this on the mic this weekend. I was in Oklahoma sorting a show, and I said it this way. That's why we make these things as different as we make them. That's why the same one doesn't always win, because we have different opinions. And what fun would it be if we just did it by vote and everybody said, this is the best one in our state. Let's just mail them all the plaques, all the banners, all the belt buckles, because we've decided that's the one. That's the best one. Thanks for coming, everybody. No need to come anymore. Unhook your trailers. Wash your tack room out, because we don't need to have any more shows. This is the best one. The fun part of what we do is the lens by which each individual sees those animals. And those kids get the opportunity to find their little niche, their little path, the kind that they like, feeding on them, showing them, taking ownership in them, and then getting to take them to as many different people as they can to see where they stack up. That's what this thing's all about. That's why the show industry will always have a place, I hope. That's why we have so much fun at it. because we talk a lot about we're raising pigs. We're raising pigs for this. We're raising. If you're raising pigs today, you're raising them for kids to show. Don't forget that you're in the kid business. If you're in the show pig business, and I'm not saying the other species aren't. Obviously, if you're raising probably show steers, show lambs, show goats, that are market driven. Well, obviously those are going to be junior exhibitors exhibited. And so you're in the kid business too. Don't lose sight of that. So I guess that's my soapbox for today. I would challenge all of our breeders out there. I know that there's great big money to have. I know that it's intriguing. It's fun. It can be competitive. It can be very, very competitive within trying to create that one. Don't forget, the reason you're trying to create them is so those kids can get a good experience. Those kids can find success. And that's why that $200 one you sell, that $50 one you sell, has just as much value in the long run potentially as the $20,000 one you sell. Because that $20,000 one's going to a kid who already knows the scoop, already knows what's going on. They got feeders, they got helpers, they got parents that understand what's going on. That kid that you sell that $250 one to, that's never had one, that's learning some things about life and livestock and responsibility that maybe just makes the sale to our county fair, maybe is the one that has the better experience, maybe that gets more out of it to take with them in life. And so I guess maybe that's how I'd like to close this deal, is just saying, hey, let's keep it in perspective. Let's make sure that whether they're industry driven or not, that we're making them for the right reasons. Hey, Matt, we're coming to the segment that probably gets you and I the most excited.
Yeah, it fires me up, my man.
Man, I'll tell you what. Every week, so far, we've had a chance to talk about some sires that intrigue us in terms of the pieces they put together genetically, the pieces they put together phenotypically, and in some cases, the progeny that we've seen out of these particular sires. It's time for Who's Your Daddy?
All right, man. Well, hey, you sent me a bull that I really like a lot, and I've been looking at this guy over the weeks, and Griswold's have one called Bet on Red. Can you tell us about him?
You know, Griswold's obviously is a cattle operation that, you know, doesn't need much introduction for me. You talk about first class, good cattle, that, you know, we talked about that industry deal that kind of fit across parameters. They're obviously going to throw out a bunch of high quality, high caliber ones. They've got a sale coming up here, you know, in another month that we're going to get to go down and film a little bit and kind of just hang out. And that, I love that experience. It's always neat to look at good cattle. And in my mind, this is what I think of when I think of bulls that are just incredibly good, that can go both directions, whether I'm trying to make, you know, elite calves in terms of show steers, elite heifers to show, as a seed stock producer to go out that could still be functional and raise those kind of calves that are functional in a somewhat a commercial environment, you know, just good line, good body length, big hipped, good in terms of the angle of his blade, still a tremendous amount of rib and body and middle in that particular bull. Man, I just think that's just good livestock. That's just good cattle right there. And we don't have his numbers pulled up, but when I was going through and looking at some of those bulls, and this is one that kind of caught my eye, and so I kind of dove in a little bit on the EPD, still really good numbered. And so, you know, bulls that have that 1-2 punch of being in that top end of where they are genetically and being practical in how those genetics kind of meld into what you're doing, and then being the bull that's good phenotypically, well, that's got a lot of value, regardless of what operation we're talking about. This is just good cattle.
I'm really excited to talk about this guy right here. And it's a Angus bull called Certainty. And when I was looking at things today, I wanted to kind of talk about production oriented and how things worked. And a lot of the guys around me are thinking about their next bull purchase, or they just made their bull purchase, or in the springtime, they're going to start purchasing another bull. And when you start thinking about those, a lot of guys are really drawn to EPDs. And I just went straight numbers and I put little things in some categories and got on the old Cattle Visions website, and I could sort some stuff out. This guy was the highest winning weight, highest yearly weight bull in the breed. He was also the highest in dollar C, which is a combination score of beef and maternal characteristics. And it was by a bunch. This guy genetically and what he can offer you is amazing. He's still deep flanked. He's still big bodied. He's still level. And when you think about those commercial cattle that we talked about earlier, you know, when we were growing up, they didn't look like this. Those commercial cows that people made money on, they didn't look like this. And this guy's probably not going to win a national show, okay, when pull asked to lead. But this guy's going to make practical cattle that grow. He's going to make females that can calve and are productive. And that makes me excited. And his numbers are great. His dollars beef's amazing. He's just kind of got it. And one thing I will say is this summer, I was asked to judge a show. And they brought out the steers and I judged the steer show. And I felt very comfortable with what I had in my top five at that show. After what it was over with, they brought out the carcass characteristics of the Sonore data and things like this. And they brought those cattle out. And by golly, the two cattle I had scored the lowest that had zero fat indicators, that had the narrowest bases, that were least amount of fat. You could see every rib. They actually were the carcass winners of the whole thing.
No kidding.
Because, yeah, genetically, they had the most marbling. Mm-hmm. They were still lean enough, but were still graining.
They yield well.
Yeah, they yielded great, and their quality score was acceptable. And it was amazing. And it really opened up my mind with, boy, how we are kind of far apart, you know? Mm-hmm. As close as we just talked about the cattle industry, we're probably still further apart than I realize.
Yeah, but it
made me happy that these guys got that, and they knew what they had. And genetically, they were selling bulls, and people were gravitating for them because of their meat quality. And that's great. And I don't know. I'm kind of in on this guy. I think that he could help some people and push some people in some good ways.
You know, like you said, so many bulls within that commercial buyer niche are bought off of data. And if you can lead those categories in as many as these bulls do, and this one in particular, that's going to have value. You know, Matt, it's that time of the episode again where we start to wind things down here on Beards and Banners. And, you know, we've talked a lot about listener feedback and folks reaching out to us. And we can't thank you, the listeners, enough for your support, your thoughts, your ideas, and your feedback. It's so important to us, and it means the world to us that you guys want to sit and listen to a couple clowns like us discuss anything. But one of the common things, probably more so than playlist, maybe more than Who's Your Daddy, that I've gotten, and I know you have as well, Matt, people really like the positive or motivational message at the end. And I can tell you, every day, it's not sunshines and rainbows. You know that. I know that. The folks at home know that. But I think talking about it a little bit and letting each other know how you get through those harder days to get to the sunshine, I think is really important. I think it's hopefully something that helps our listeners. I know it's helped me. You and I have talked before. Sometimes just having somebody to talk to or somebody to listen to you makes all the difference. Matt, it's your week. I can't wait to see what you have. Let us know what you think.
So when I think about helping people out with mental health or different things that people go through, first of all, I like to say is, listeners, you are enough. You are enough. You are good. And there are people who love you. And sometimes we have to realize that, and the glass is not always half full, and sometimes it's almost empty. But at the same time, we have to realize, hey, there are so many things to be thankful for. Lately, I've been thinking about, hey, every day, show gratitude to God for three things that I'm thankful for. And when you start every day saying, okay, I'm thankful for these three things, even if they're little things like I'm thankful for a hot shower, I'm thankful for this bacon that, or turkey bacon, as you said, anything that we can do to be thankful is always a good thing. There's one person who always knows that you're enough, and that's God. So Philippians 4:13 says this, "For I can do everything through Christ who gives me strength. Whatever I have, wherever I am, I can make it through anything in the one who makes me who I am." So you are you for a reason. God made you for a reason. He gave you talents. He gave you ambition. We're made because he wanted you to be that way. So when you start to think of that, maybe it can shed some light and give you some meaning behind who you are and what you got going on. And hopefully that can help you through this week.
Matt, I love that message. I love it. You know, everyone I've ever met, everyone I know, everyone I've had a chance to get to know a little bit in my life, which is, you know, you and I are, we're old. So we've had a chance to get to know and interact with a lot of folks over the years. I've never met anybody who didn't have something to offer, who didn't have a talent of some kind, that it wasn't a unique to them type situation. I love the message because one of the things that I tell people a lot, and I think it's so important and so pertinent in today's kind of social media driven world, don't compare your daily routine to someone else's highlight reel. Because at the end, the race is not with them. The race is with you. Every day you get up and you're the best you you can be. Don't compare you to them or your accomplishments to their accomplishments, because that's not at all what it's about. You go be the best you you can be. And you are enough. And I love that, Matt. I think that's a great message. You are enough.
From Beards and Banners, we hope that you have the happiest of Thanksgivings. And hey, check on your neighbors. Check on your friends.
And don't forget, be nice.
Hey, happy Thanksgiving, everybody.
Happy Thanksgiving.